I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
You know, Mitch.
They love their Cougars.
Mitch Harper.
Welcome on in, Cougar Tracks Podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. I'm your BYU insider, Mitch Harper. Happy as always to have you on board to the podcast wherever you may be listening. Appreciate you checking out the show. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google Play, Spotify. It's available on all major podcasting platforms. And you can also get the show on the KSL Sports app, which is presented by University Federal Credit Union. We've got a lot of ground to cover on this edition of the show. Way too early rankings, the latest on the transfer portal. What needs does BYU still have in that portal? College football playoff expansion. I want to touch on that a little bit. And the latest with BYU hoops as the Cougars fall to Gonzaga. Share my thoughts on that game, but the future of the BYU-Gonzaga series and a tough matchup ahead against the San Francisco Dons. But we'll start things off with football and the way too early rankings on the gridiron. And after the college football season ends, it's always a mad rush to for every media outlet that's covering the sport to put out their way too early rankings. At KSL Sports, I kind of spearheaded the move to for us to put up our way too early top 25 rankings this year, and about seven people on the KSL Sports staff put in their vote, and BYU checked in at number 18 on the ranking. I will be honest, that's a little bit higher than I was expecting BYU to appear on the way too early poll, not necessarily for KSL Sports. But it was, you know, BYU was pretty much a way too early team for many of the national outlets that put out the top 25 rankings for the 2022 season. I think the biggest thing that BYU deserves to be in next year's preseason rankings is because back-to-back years, 10 wins, and I know that you can't just base everything off past success when looking ahead to the future. We get caught up too much in that in college football, but BYU's done it with two different quarterbacks, two different styles of play, two different schedule types. I mean, throw anything you want at BYU. They've pretty much passed every test with flying colors, other than, of course, that sleet-filled, dreary day in Shreveport at the Independence Bowl. The program for BYU football has been really impressive these past two seasons, and I think because of that and the trajectory of Cougar football, they deserve to be in the way too early rankings, and I think in next year's preseason top 25 going into 2022, barring any sort of devastating injury or anything like that, I think BYU warrants top 25 inclusion. I had BYU at number 23, and I say that because BYU defensively is where my questions lie. It's just, I've expressed some concern about the defense in the previous episodes. I think that is where BYU has got to get things fixed if they want to be maybe a top 15, top 10, or, you know, New Year's Six type of team next year. Because I think offensively, there's not many questions I have about BYU's team. If they stay healthy, that's going to be an explosive offense. But defensively, and if they stay healthy, their top 11 should be really good. The top 11 for BYU's defense should be stout. But I think the scheme, you know, it's created some opportunities to poke holes in that defense. And I think that, you know, after that Independence Bowl, it was a little bit of a gut check for the defense. And maybe it'll be a good thing for BYU football long term to take a little bit of a step back to make, you know, two or three steps forward. I'm a big believer in that, honestly. Back in 2017, when they go 4-9, huge step back for the program, but you kind of had to hit rock bottom in order to build it back up. I'm kind of one of those thinkers. Like, if I was an NBA GM, I'm a huge believer in the tank method. Like, tank all the way, hit this thing to ground zero, and then we'll build it up from there. Like, I'm a big believer in that. And that was 2017, rock bottom, start the build, get the Zach Wilsons, and away you go. But BYU checks in at number 18 in the KSL Sports Way Too Early rankings. Another theme that I saw from these Way Too Early polls, including the KSL Sports one, is that many of BYU's 2022 opponents will likely be ranked heading into next season. Notre Dame, a consensus Way Too Early pick. Arkansas is one of those trendy teams that could be as high as 6 or 7 or in the middle, you know, teens range. Oregon's kind of a mixed bag where they're ranking with new head coach Dan Lanning. But the schedule for BYU in 2022, not as many P5s, but I think the top end talent that BYU will face and the ranking and the stature of these teams will be far more significant than the ones they faced in 2021. Gone is the winless Arizona. I know they got one win, but pretty much a crapshoot Arizona team. Those, I don't see any of those P5s that BYU faces in 2022 being anywhere nearly as bad as that Arizona team. I think all these squads that are from the P5 ranks could be nationally ranked when BYU plays them. So it'll be an exciting season of BYU football next year, and those Way Too Early rankings always get the people excited going forward. Another thing that gets people excited is the transfer portal. And a lot of talk in the portal this week about Jackson Dart entering the portal. And smart move by him. I think that that's the right move to explore your options. We got to remember, too, in college football now, the transfer portal's been around since, what, 2017, 2018. This isn't a new concept, but what's kind of new now is that there's that waiver for undergrad transfer. So it's creating a scenario where guys just kind of, you know, test the waters a little bit, see what's out there. Jackson Dart could go back to USC. I think it's unlikely, but he could go back. He had a visit on campus to Oklahoma. TCU's been mentioned as a possible destination. Ole Miss, which, not going to lie, that seems like a perfect fit. SEC football, Jackson Dart. I know he's a Utah kid, but Lane Kiffin with Dart. Kiffin's kind of a West Coast guy himself. I think that would be a pretty good fit, honestly. But I also think BYU would be a great fit for Jackson Dart as well. And when word came out that Dart was entering the portal, I put out a tweet that BYU, you know, likely would target him, and I think they should, and I think that there's no reason not to. And there's kind of been mixed opinions on that, because BYU has Jaren Hall, they've got Jacob Conover, they still got Solje Maiava-Peters, Kate Finnegan. That's a good QB room. I think that's a solid QB room. I think that's better than many of the quarterback rooms that BYU had early on in the tenure of Kalani Sitake, many of the QB rooms under Bronco Mendenhall. I mean, you've got to go back to the Lavelle Edwards days to find a better QB room than that. It's, you know, BYU is kind of back in the quarterback business with the way that they've been producing talent and efficient high-level numbers out of that room. But I think what one thing that stood out to me with Kalani Sitake, and it again goes back to that 2017 season where you take a massive step back, it teaches you lessons. It taught BYU football a lot of things that maybe they didn't want to learn, but they learned it that season. And if you remember in 2017, and I brought this up on Cougar Tracks, the show, last week, one of the things that was interesting was that Jaren Hall will just be kind of anointed the starting QB in 2022. There's not going to be some manufactured quarterback battle. You can't spin that narrative that it's down to Jaren and Conover. No one's going to buy that. And Kalani has always been, since that 2017 season, he wants every position, including the quarterback, to compete for the job. He doesn't want to just hand over the job. And that's why, to me, I think BYU would love to get Jackson Dart. One, because he's an elite talent. I mean, Jackson Dart is a top-shelf quarterback, a five-star in the transfer portal. He's big time. He's going to be an outstanding college quarterback. You saw the signs already in his 1 year at USC. So that alone is reason enough to want to get him. But there's always this sensitivity when it comes to the QB position. Well, you've already got a QB in place. You've already got this guy. You're going to hurt some feelings. Folks, this is big-time college football. And I look at it from a standpoint of if you got Jackson Dart, and again, it seems kind of unlikely considering that the attention shifting to a lot of programs, but I still think BYU's got an appealing case. Jaren Hall, if he becomes QB1 in a room that featured Jackson Dart, well, Jaren Hall has earned that. He's won that job decisively, and you feel pretty confident that he's going to take another leap forward in his game in 2022 and beyond. And I think Jaren Hall, honestly, is going to be spectacular, whether Jackson Dart's at BYU or not. I think Jaren Hall is going to be outstanding for BYU. I think he's going to be an NFL draft pick when it's all said and done, when his BYU career is over. I think it's just always a matter of pushing guys and making them better. When you go into the Big 12 Conference, it can no longer be about, well, someone's feelings are going to get hurt. You got to have competitive depth in every position. This is big-time college football. And in the era of the transfer portal and NIL, players have more of a voice than ever before. They got social media platforms with large followings. They can tell their story as they see fit. If a situation's not good, they can move on. They can go to the transfer portal. That is available to them. So I don't think there shouldn't be any hurt feelings about the thought of if BYU does pursue any sort of quarterback. Because I think if you don't get Jackson Dart, I still would go pursue a QB after spring practices. And I say spring practices because typically we see these ebbs and flows in the transfer portal. Right when the season ends for a team, portal is just hot and heavy. Then there's a little bit of a lull. Spring football happens. Once spring football is over for teams and the depth chart starts to kind of form for the upcoming season, transfer portal activity heats up again. Remember, BYU got Cade Finnegan after spring football. It was about the springtime. He transferred from Boise State to BYU. So I think BYU should always have kind of a roaming eye a little bit in that portal when it comes to the QB position because of how much success they're having there. But then two, you know, Jaren Hall has a history of getting injured. And we've seen in recent history for BYU football outside of 2020, you probably need three quarterbacks. Do you feel confident that Cade Finnegan or Solje Maiava-Peters is ready to be that third guy? Solje gets a little bit discredited, and I think that he shouldn't because, you know, Aaron Roderick is not just writing him off and moving him to another position. The guy's had 2 years in that QB room to digest and learn the playbook. Now, I don't think he's necessarily game ready to week in, week out lead a team, but I think that the benefit of the doubt should be given to Aaron Roderick, that he sees something in Solje Maiava-Peters that for everyone else, they just say, oh, he's not a QB. That's a mistake. I disagree. I think that he could be QB3 again, and they might have to turn to him. But if you could upgrade that spot, whether it's Finnegan or, you know, who's already in-house or someone in the portal, that can push Conover and compete for time as that number two or even the starter, you always got to just have that as an opportunity in there. And I think Kalani and the staff approach it that way. I do. If they feel like they can get better out of that transfer portal, they're going to make that move. They got better getting Chris Brooks. They got better getting Houston Haymuli. They got better when they added Puka Nacua last year. They got better 3 years ago when they added Tyson Williams. BYU's done a nice job with their transfer portal ads. And I think they will always kind of keep an open door and be open-minded when it comes to possible names that emerge in that transfer portal. But Jackson Dart's fascinating, and I can't wait to see where he ends up playing, and he's going to be a heck of a football player. I mean, that guy, I think he can go to any QB room, and he could be a QB1 anywhere. I mean, he's just that good. He is a heck of a football player. Watching him at Corner Canyon, a little bit lesser at Roy, but still knowledge of him. BYU was his first offer back then. He's a heck of a talent. And, you know, that relationship between him and I think the BYU coaching staff is a strong one. And I think it's one that could give them a puncher's chance if he kind of gets a feel for the market and sees what's out there. Maybe BYU could be more interesting to him going forward. But we'll continue to monitor that situation with Jackson Dart in the transfer portal because I know Cougar fans love portal activity. And personally, I do too. I love transfer portal moves. And I think it's a good thing for college football. It's kind of taking on the mold of NBA free agency. I think more people are getting excited about transfer portal additions and moves than the actual games themselves. And I think BYU still has some areas where they can improve out of the transfer portal. I think the defensive back area is somewhere where BYU has to get a guy or two out of the portal. Remember last year, they had Jacob Robinson. That was a big addition. He ended up being a freshman All-American for BYU, and he had some struggles early on, but by season's end, before his injury, Jacob Robinson did a really nice job at that nickel spot for BYU, and he's got a bright future ahead for the Cougars over the next 3 years. So defensive back is a top priority, whether it be cornerback or safety. You got to find some DBs. And I think that, you know, that's a position where a lot of guys go into the portal. You know, wide receivers, running backs, QBs, a little bit lesser there, but still QBs, only one guy gets to play. They'll go into the portal, and then defensive backs. It's not often you see defensive linemen, because if you're a great D lineman and you're playing, unless you're, you know, got a personal situation where you want to be closer to home or something like that, you're not seeing linemen go often into the portal. That's why getting a guy like Kingsley Suamataia is kind of a shocking deal. Like, that just doesn't happen to get a potential first-round NFL talent at left tackle or right tackle out of the portal. That's just not happening. But that was a unique situation. And DB is going to be somewhere where there's going to be a lot of opportunities. And BYU's been in contact with some guys already. There was a Chris Adamora from Texas who BYU offered out of high school. There's a little bit of relationship there. Some guys out of TCU. So BYU's been putting some feelers out there with DBs. I got to imagine that they could get a guy or two. You know, and BYU's defensive back room is not bad for 2022. I mean, Caleb Hayes is going to be a starter. He's going to be a great player for BYU, and he was another transfer portal guy. Like, again, the infusion of transfer portal guys, BYU isn't missing often on these portal dudes. Like, Robinson and Hayes were two of the top guys, and they were portal guys for BYU. So you always got to be active in that transfer portal. So Caleb Hayes comes back. D'Angelo Mandel, he's going to be back, and I think he's going to be, you know, it's a big opportunity for him. He's had a lot of years in this BYU program. You wonder what type of next step does he make in his final year before he can go and try to make a career professionally in football. Isaiah Heron, Caleb Christensen, Quinton Rice, very excited about him. High upside, the son to Rodney Rice, so keep an eye on him. But then in the safety room, you got Chaz Ayu, who's going to be a little bit of more of a hybrid safety linebacker. I'll have an episode with Chaz coming up on Monday that you definitely want to listen to. It's a way too early look at 2022, and Chaz gives some great insight into this BYU football team. Malik Moore, George Udo, who's, you know, kind of a hybrid as well. Ammon Hanneman, JaVale Brown. Micah Harper could be a safety, too. He's also a guy that's a cornerback. He's going to be big time. You know, anywhere that he lines up, he's going to be kind of in that Dion Gunwoloku mode. You know, and he's someone that, unlike Dion, isn't, I don't think, married to the cornerback position per se. I think he just wants to get back on that field, and whether it's safety or corner, he's versatile enough to where he could play at a high level at any one of those spots. And what's exciting is that you've already got a ton of data on him from his freshman year in 2020, and he's still only a freshman, redshirt freshman, going into 2022. Talon Alfrey coming back from a season-ending injury he suffered last offseason. Dean Jones, Isaiah Glasker joins the program from Bingham High School. Ethan Slade from Orem, he's another safety. But, you know, again, I think you want to always upgrade. If you can get someone that can enroll in the summertime and come in and contribute right away, you want to do that. That was the path for Caleb Hayes, and it worked out quite nicely getting him out of the transfer portal. But again, I the other spot would be defensive line, but you just don't see D linemen in the portal very often. There was a guy from Nevada that BYU's been in contact with, an interior D lineman, but again, they're few and far between. Like, the Siaki Ika types are rare. So you typically look at like a coaching change and a player doesn't like the new scheme, then they're bouncing or they want to be closer to home. Siaki Ika goes to Baylor because he follows Dave Aranda. Now he's going to be, he is the face of Baylor's defense, who's now the Big 12 champion. So there you go. That's the transfer portal latest. The ever-evolving transfer portal is a fascinating dynamic. But, you know, and another thing I think with the portal is that this year, I think, is just an insanely high year, an outlier, honestly, when it comes to portal entrance. I don't think you're going to see the number as high going forward. There's just been a lot of volatility when it comes to, or uncertainty when it comes to scholarship distribution, the 85 scholarship, this and that in college football. There's just a lot of moving parts because of the pandemic. It's creating situations where six-year guys are coming and they're locking down a scholarship, and there's just a lot of moving parts right now. I think in the years to come, in 2023, 2024, you're going to see this transfer portal cool off just a touch. I think many people are having a lot of hot takes on this, and I don't think it's completely fair, but I think the portal is a definite good thing for college football. What would also be a good thing for college football is a college football playoff expansion, and reports came out on Friday that the ACC, their commissioner, Jim Phillips, who was originally the Northwestern AD previously, the ACC is an alignment that they are against expansion at this time. Unbelievable to me. I just had to sound off on this because how is a league like the ACC, who has no one right now outside of Clemson that could threaten to be in the 4-team playoff, why would they not want a 12-team playoff? It's just bizarre. It's shocking. It blows me away how any league wants to stay with this 4-team model. You're just going to see all SEC championship games year after year after year after year. It's only going to get worse. Now, the 12-team model could still produce all SEC titles, but the key is to get everyone invested in college football's postseason from coast to coast. Look, this postseason was the worst in recent memory for college football. When you factored in the cancellations, the poor quality of games, the interim coaches, the bowl season was terrible. It was terrible. The semifinal games were horrendous. College football needs an updated postseason, and 12 teams could still produce Alabama and Georgia. We get it. But I don't think there's much of a drop-off from teams 3 to 12 in college football. I think Michigan could have been upset by a Pitt if they have Kenny Pickett. I think BYU could have taken down a Cincinnati, maybe, in one game. I just think that there's not much of a drop-off between that grouping of teams. And we need to see a 12-team playoff. The issue, honestly, is that these leagues, they're just going for their personal agendas, man. And it's frustrating for college football fans because they get dangled this 12-team playoff, which honestly sounded perfect. The highest-ranked conference champions from six leagues. Perfect. More times than not, it's always going to be the Power 5 plus one G5. But it still gives the hope to everyone in college football that, hey, even the Conference USA champ could maybe, if they put together a magical year, they could be one of the six highest-ranked teams. It's just, I don't understand why this sport doesn't make things easier on themselves. And Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, at the recent meetings in Indianapolis, he was upset with this not being expanded already because he was part of the working group, him, Jack Swarbrick, Greg Sankey, that put together that 12-team proposal for 2 years. And it's been dangled out there, and now it's just being sacked. And it's likely not going to happen. And we're now going to have to wait until after this current college football playoff TV deal runs up. And then after that point, the issue then becomes it doesn't have to be a unanimous agreement to agree to a certain playoff proposal. And that's the fear that everyone should be having right now, is that then it becomes a deal where, well, if you don't want to play in this playoff, say the Mountain West, you don't have to participate. You can do your own thing. And then you just have to bend the knee and give in to the Power 5 leagues. Now, I'm not vouching for the Mountain West Conference by any stretch of the imagination. But I also wonder with the Big 12, I think that this is an interesting dynamic circling with BYU and the tie there for the Cougars. For the first time ever, BYU has a voice at these tables representing them, which is a fascinating dynamic in and of itself for BYU's perspective, because throughout this playoff, they've had no voice. Zero. None. Even Utah State's got an advocate. They had Craig Thompson. BYU had no voice. Them, Liberty, and Army had zero voice. New Mexico State as well. That was it. I mean, for the first time, they've got a voice now. And Bob Bowlesby, who's representing their league. And I think, oddly enough, you would think that the Big 12 and the SEC maybe hate each other now because, well, the SEC raided and took Texas and Oklahoma. But I think that it's a noteworthy thing that the SEC and Big 12 are kind of in lockstep with wanting to expand the playoff. And I got to think that can only help the Big 12 going forward, because at the end of the day, the SEC runs college football. And the Big 12 is in a part of the country that has SEC footprint, Southeast. You know, there is a reach there. I think it's a good thing. Like, hopefully Bob Bowlesby can, and Greg Sankey can have some sort of, I don't want to say alliance, because that's, you know, the Pac-12, Big 10, ACC. But I think it's a good thing for the strength of the Big 12 to be somewhat aligned with what the SEC wants to do. And I think the SEC, to a little bit of extent, is also grateful for the Big 12 that back in 2020, the Big 12 agreed to play football and it saved the college football season. Had it not been for the Big 12's decision to do that, college football in 2020 was going downhill. It was going to be gone. So I think that's a positive development, but you just wonder, in that next iteration after this TV deal, what does the playoff look like? Will it be this 12 team with six highest ranked champs? I doubt it, because again, it doesn't become a deal of everything has to be unanimous. If you're going to rework the current contract, all of the conferences, Notre Dame AD, they all have to be in agreement with all the changes. Whereas in the next iteration, it just has to be a certain percentage and it doesn't have to be unanimous. And you hope that the Big 12 still carries a big voice through all that. There hasn't been any suggestion that the Big 12 is going to not have some sort of automatic qualifier. I mean, their Power 5 status is going to remain intact. That's not going away. That's never going to be gone. But again, you just wonder if it's going to be the Big 10, the SEC, and the Pac-12 to try to create their own deal. Well, the SEC runs college football, and I think the Big 12 is more than happy to be in lockstep with the SEC. So, college football playoff, hopefully it gets expanded in this current TV deal, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen because the ACC of all leagues is holding it up. Are you kidding me? The ACC. Gosh. I mean, if Miami was rolling, if Florida State was rolling, I'd maybe give a little bit more respect to the ACC. That is a terrible conference. Like, you just had a season where your conference champion in Pitt, who had a great season, they played in a pointless Peach Bowl where the quarterback opted out. And you lost. Like, wouldn't you want to reward your conference champion in Pitt with a chance to go to a 12-team playoff and have a chance to do something? It's crazy to me. College football is such a bizarre sport, but hey, we love it. We love it so much. You know who has a great postseason in college sports? It's college basketball. And BYU, well, on their way to, I think, getting to an NCAA tournament, but it always gets a little bit dicey when you're in a West Coast conference because any sort of losses can poke holes for the committee to look at BYU in a different light. But when you play Gonzaga, it's not going to hurt your resume whether you win or lose. And more times than not, you're going to probably lose. And that's what happened when BYU fell to the Zags on Thursday, 110-84. Gonzaga had 100 points through 34 minutes of gameplay against the Cougs. Like, that's just insane. 6 minutes remaining, and they had 100 points already. Gonzaga was off the charts good offensively, 69% from the field. Just an out of this world performance. You know, as crazy as this sounds, I came away from that game feeling pretty good about BYU, a little bit better than actually I've seen them play the last three or so weeks. Honestly, I thought it was the best performance I've seen from BYU, at least on the offensive end, in quite some time. Defensively, I've seen enough from this BYU team that I know they're going to be really good. They're going to be fine. Like, Gonzaga is just an elite offensive team. They're going to bounce back from this. But offensively, gave you some promise. It gave you some hope because I just hadn't seen much offensively from BYU to think that they can put up enough points and score enough buckets to win games against NCAA tournament quality teams. And even though they got blown out and it wasn't close, they hung around for the first 10 minutes or so. But I came away with some little bit of optimism for BYU going forward. I thought Caleb Lohner did a nice job. And Lohner, the whole stuff about everybody hates Gonzaga. I'll be honest. I was sitting in that media availability on Tuesday. And when he said that, I didn't really think much of it in the moment. I didn't, because the way he built up the quote was, he was asked about where this Gonzaga game would rank in his basketball career personally, both high school and college, as far as the biggest games. And he said, you know, definitely one of the biggest games. And he was building it up like there's a lot of respect for Gonzaga, and this will be the ultimate measuring stick game. And then he said something to the effect of, everybody hates Gonzaga, we're really excited to go play those guys. Something like that. I got to pull up the exact quote, but just paraphrasing there. But it didn't come off as one of those like Max Hall moments where it's like he's just going scorched earth and saying, I hate these guys, I hate them. Like, kind of like that hate line with Duke, where they're just so good, like you hate how successful they are. That's kind of how it came off to me. It wasn't anything like, yeah, those dirt bags up at Gonzaga, we hate them, we hate them. I don't think it was that at all, and I thought that kind of got just spun quite a bit, and I think Gonzaga fans interpreted that it completely wrong, and Lohner became the focal point for Gonzaga students and fans. But hey, Lohner rose the occasion. He had his best offensive performance of the season, 17 points, 7 of 10 from the field, and he knocked down two threes. Lohner, if he plays that aggressive again throughout the rest of the season, BYU is going to get to the dance and they got a chance to win a game. Lohner is the key. I've been singing that for so long. Lohner is the key. And so, hey, I think every road game, just start booing Lohner. Maybe that'll inspire him to play better. Another interesting angle from BYU-Gonzaga. Mark Few was asked in the post game the future of the BYU-Gonzaga series after the Cougars plan to leave the West Coast Conference to go to the Big 12. And Few said, quote, it's been great. They are a great, worthy opponent. Obviously, the atmospheres are terrific, whether they're in the kennel or down at the Marriott Center. I'm quite certain we'll have something going on in the future, end quote. Would you like to see BYU continue to play Gonzaga? I'll be honest. I kind of like the Gonzaga series better when BYU's facing them as a non-conference team. I think there'll be more national appeal behind the game. Big 12 versus a national power in Gonzaga. I think that's just more appealing. Look, The West Coast Conference has served its purpose. It gave BYU a home when they needed to put football as an independent. It's been a great thing for BYU. It has. As evidenced by the Learfield Director's Cup standings, where they're number one after the fall rankings, which is a story in and of itself. But I think that when BYU goes to the Big 12, they should absolutely schedule Gonzaga. Maybe not every year, but twice every 6 years or so. So then you kind of give almost every class of athletes that maybe are program guys the chance to face the Zags. I mean, as long as Mark Few's there, Gonzaga's not slowing down. They're going to be awesome forever. It's just, I thought they would take a little bit of a step back this year without Suggs. Just a little bit? No. It's not happening. I mean, I guess they have taken a little bit of a step back because they've actually lost two games. But still, they're going to be a Final Four team. They're loaded. And I like the value that it would bring playing them in a non-conference setting. I think it'd be cool. Whether you play them in Salt Lake, play them in Provo, ideally. Kennel, Seattle, I just think that it's a good series. And I can appreciate it a little bit more for BYU's sake as a non-conference game. Because in conference, when you lose to them, you just go, well, now we have to go undefeated the rest of the season. That's basically, what BYU's got to be thinking here. They don't lose to anyone in league, Gonzaga. They're 104-0 since 2014 against teams not named BYU or St. Mary's, so they never lose a game. And if you do lose one game to them, well, your conference title hopes are shot. You're playing for second place. It's absolutely nuts. I would almost argue, and I know BYU hasn't been in the grind of the Big 12 season yet, winning the WCC has to be harder than the Big 12 conference, right? I mean, you just look at it right now, like Baylor's already dropped a game in Big 12 play. They've already dropped a game, and Baylor's like maybe the best team in college basketball this year. They've already lost a game. You're going to lose games. Even Kansas last year like lost five games in conference play. Kansas, they lost five games. Like, there's actual hope for some sort of change. And I know Kansas has just been a juggernaut in the Big 12. They're like Gonzaga in their own right, but it just still feels like they will actually drop games, whereas Gonzaga never lose a game, so you have to be damn near perfect to win a conference title. And who goes undefeated in any conference other than Gonzaga? They're the only ones that do that. It's just, it's insane to me how dominant Gonzaga is year after year after year. And I really think, too, with Gonzaga, it's amazing to me how they've just kicked it into high gear this last decade. Because remember when BYU first joined the league, they didn't win the conference, Gonzaga. It was St. Mary's. St. Mary's won the regular season title, and they won the conference tournament. And you're thinking, oh, it's a new day. It's a new era in the West Coast Conference. BYU's in. St. Mary's is knocking off Gonzaga. It's a new era. And then even in those like Kevin Pangos teams, Gonzaga would drop like seven or eight regular season games, and some of which would even be to the likes of Portland or San Francisco. They would drop WCC games. Not anymore. Ever since about the Kelly Olynyk days and Kyle Wilcher, they don't lose ever. And you just go, man, what do you do? What do you got to do to even contend for the conference title? Like, BYU basically lost out on the regular season conference title on Thursday night. Like, it's just, now they're playing for second. And hey, being in second place in the WCC, that's more than good enough to get an at-large bid in the NCAA tournament. But you know what's better is probably even being sixth place in the Big 12, and you'll probably still get a just as comparable of a seed. And it's just wild. I would argue that the WCC is tougher to win than the Big 12 conference. That's just kind of my vantage point. Seeing this for the last 10 years for BYU, it is just the most bizarre league, how just the top is just elite and then the bottom is the dregs of college basketball. Is the most bizarre league you'll ever find. But hey, only a few more years of it for BYU. I think they should continue scheduling Gonzaga, though, with that said. So now BYU turns their attention to the San Francisco Dons, and this is going to be a really good game. It could be the first time BYU in the Mark Pope era drops back-to-back games. This is the biggest threat to that happening. for BYU. They've dropped back-to-back games in the postseason when they lost to Gonzaga last year in Vegas and then lost to UCLA in the NCAA tournament. But in regular season play, BYU has never lost consecutive games. San Francisco is going to be an NCAA tournament team this year, most likely. 15-2 overall. One of their two losses is Loyola Chicago on the fly, which was a heck of a fun game to attend and cover. I love that. That was a good game to go watch. But when I saw San Francisco in person, I was like, man, they are bigger than I thought. And that guard line is still there with Shabazz and Bouye. And those guys always tear up BYU, I swear. It's going to be a difficult matchup. But what makes San Francisco an NCAA tournament team this year is a transfer from within the WCC, a transfer from San Diego, Yahin Masaiki. I'm probably saying that completely wrong. I'm so sorry, Yahin. But he's playing at first-team all-conference level. He's one of the best players in the league this year. So efficient, 6'9", causes a lot of mismatch problems. Not a guy that's shooting out on the outside, but, man, he is incredibly efficient around the basket. So him, Bouye, and Shabazz, going to be a difficult matchup. And I got to say, I think this weekend is kind of a little bit of a dress rehearsal for life in the Big 12, where you go two games on the road against NCAA tournament caliber teams, and if you lose them, it's not sound the alarm. It's just, well, you know, that happens. Losing on the road in college basketball, that's the reality. It's one of the toughest deals to accomplish in sports is winning on the road consistently in college hoops. And San Francisco will be an incredibly difficult out. Whoever wins this game is going to have the clear-cut inside track to be the second-best team in the West Coast Conference. This is a game that San Francisco absolutely has to win. BYU doesn't have to win this game. San Francisco, though, it's a must. You know, they're still kind of that pesky team that's trying to fight to get in the NCAA tournament. BYU is pretty much a lock, unless they just have an absolute bottoming-out disaster. I don't see that happening. San Francisco still needs that additional quality win to enhance their metrics. They haven't been to the dance since 1998. Goodness gracious, that was when BYU was in the whack. That's how long ago it's been. So it's been a long time for San Francisco. This is probably their game of the year. I mean, Gonzaga is always going to be that biggest game, but BYU is going to be huge for San Francisco just from the standpoint of what it means for them. Todd Golden's one heck of a coach, one of the youngest coaches in college basketball, but a brilliant basketball mind. This will be a challenging game, but hey, if Caleb Lohner can have the performance he did against Gonzaga on the hilltop, BYU will be okay. This won't be a blowout. This will be a game that's down to the wire, and it's a toss-up. I mean, I kind of lean a little bit to San Francisco based on how efficient they are. They can pump threes. Like they are a team that's averaging close to they're in double figures when it comes to three-point makes. BYU knocked down a ton of threes against Gonzaga, 10 in the first half. That kind of felt like a little bit of an outlier. That's the norm for San Francisco, putting up a lot of threes. So BYU's defense has got to be elite once again. Kind of just discard that Gonzaga performance and bounce back on the defensive end to try to shut down Bouye and Shabazz and limit the three-pointers for the Dons. But it should be a heck of a game. 9 p.m. tip, 8 o'clock pregame on KSL News Radio. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Cougar Tracks podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. It's always a pleasure talking with Cougar Nation here on the show. And if you haven't done so already, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google Play, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms. I'll catch you on Monday when you can hear my conversation with BYU linebacker and safety Chaz Ayu here on the Cougar Tracks podcast. And it's always powered by KSLSports.com.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.